the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Tosca Reno's writing career started with a column that she still writes for Oxygen magazine called Raise the Bar, in which she offers motivational advice about fitness training, eating, and health to women aged 40 and older. The success of the column led to her first book, The Eat Clean Diet, which has been expanded into a series of 9 books. Her latest is Tosca Reno's Eat Clean Cookbook, nominated for a Gourmand World Cookbook Award. Tosca is in Columbus for the Arnold Sports and Fitness Expo. Welcome to Writer's Talk.
Hey, my pleasure to be here. Thank you, Doug.
Okay, well, you started your journey to becoming an author when you underwent a transformational experience at age 40. Tell me about that. What led you to this writing?
Everybody loves a good before and after, right?
Right, sure.
I came to a point in my life where I realized if I continued doing what I was doing, which was eating anything in sight, paying lots of attention to my particular favorites, ice cream, cheese, and peanut butter, that I realized if I kept up with that, I wouldn't be around very long to look after my daughters. And I felt that was such a privilege to be a good parent that I needed to do better. I wasn't good at taking care of myself. I was good at taking all kinds of care for other people. So that was kind of my aha moment. I actually looked at a photograph of myself with my daughters, and it was a summertime picture. And they were, you know, tan and lean, and I looked like a blob. I just thought, I can't do this. I just don't want to do this anymore. There's got to be more. And I was unhappy, too.
Okay. So you went into a gym and got on a treadmill and felt empowered.
I started there. I think it's easy for us to do that because all it requires is running shoes, get on the treadmill, anybody can do this. I soon learned, though, that that's not enough. You can't create shape in the physique by just running. Cardiovascular exercise is fantastic, but it's weight training that gives you shape. And I still wasn't paying attention to what I was eating at that time either, so I had a lot to learn.
Okay. So tell me about some of the things that you've learned. You've developed the oxygen column into a series of textbooks, of cookbooks. So tell me what the kernel idea of the Eat Clean diet is.
Well, going backwards a little bit, the reason how I discovered about eating clean was I was issued a challenge to compete in a bodybuilding contest. Mm-hmm. So I had begun this transformation. Here I am on the treadmill. And then what we did was I met Robert Kennedy, who is the founder of Robert Kennedy Publishing, who said, you know, I see something in you. I think you should try to compete in a bodybuilding contest. Bizarre. But I figured, you know, if I can't control a lot of things in my life, but if somebody's giving me this opportunity and they're willing to train me and teach me how to eat correctly, fine. Because his caveat was, do this, but you have to eat what I tell you to eat, when I tell you to eat it, and train as I say. So
a little loss of control there over your eating
habits. Yes, exactly, exactly. But I wasn't doing a good job anyway. So, and the thing was, he astounded me because one of the principles of eating clean that just blew me away was, you need to eat more. And that just is counterintuitive to anything that people do when they're losing weight because they think losing weight means counting calories, skipping meals. Well, totally wrong. In this case, it's eating more, eating 6 smaller meals throughout the course of the day, eating every 2 or 3 hours, partnering lean protein and complex carbohydrates together. I never thought about what I was eating. I was just putting it in there. And so this is a way of switching on the body's own metabolism to do the job it was always meant to do, which is run the body, but also burn fuel.
Okay.
And that was the magic.
Okay. So tell me about writing your cookbooks as opposed to writing for a column, right? do you take the things from the column and repurpose them, remediate them, change them for this, or how does that work?
So much of my column, Raise the Bar for Oxygen magazine, is the voice that I found. I had gone to sleep for those 40 years, and the voice that I found as I embarked on the journey to transform my body, and that sparked an interest amongst women and men, really, who wanted to have all these questions answered about, well, how do I do this? How do I eat? How do I train? How do I stay motivated and inspired? And that's where the book came from, the first book. The column gave me my voice. The book was really, I had to answer the question so many times, I thought, let me just write a book. Mm-hmm. And so the first book was born out of simply a necessity to share the story and share the inspiration.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the kind of cooking that you do in here. A friend of mine who reads cookbooks for pleasure, just reads them straight through, was wondering about how often you cook. So how often do you cook and then test out the recipes that are in the cookbook?
I would say it's easier to answer the question. I eat out very infrequently.
Okay.
So I'm always preparing food. I like it. I don't get annoyed about the fact that I have to shop for groceries and put meals together. Because for me, it's the ultimate way of nurturing yourself, something I hadn't done very well before. But I know how good I feel when I eat well. And I enjoy the process of putting excellent ingredients together. Now, when I say excellent, I mean good quality, yes, but seasonal foods that are at their highest nutritional peak. Putting those on a plate and having a wonderful meal together. First of all, it's simple science. I'm no chef, I'm just a cook, but I like to put the good foods together and create health at the same time. So really, it's something that I sort of live and breathe all the time.
Okay. Now, you're from Canada.
Yeah.
We established this earlier.
Did I say A?
A? No.
I hope not.
But so especially in Canada and even in Ohio, seasonal foods are, we have like one season, for food.
I know.
So you're trucking
it's six
in,
months long.
Right. Well, if you're lucky, really, it's 6 months long. So tell me about what kind of seasonal foods and how that impacts what you're writing. If you're in California, say, you're very lucky, it seems
yeah.
to me. Seasonal food is easy to get. In Ohio, it's not easy to get.
Yeah.
So how does that play into, or it's easier now than it used to be?
It is easier, yeah. In fact, I think because we have these stores who are, I'm saying, Michael Pollan sort of did a number on us all when he wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, because he's teaching us how to think differently about food. And I like to think that I'm one of those disciples as well. So you can join grocery cooperatives where they will deliver to you whatever happens to be readily available from their sources for every week of the month or every month, whatever you like. And so you're doing, this time of year, root vegetables, lots of onions, garlic, and I'm really big on the leafy greens, kale, cruciferous vegetables, all these things. And there's no shortage of ways that you can use those in your meals. So I feel like it's not a limitation. I feel like people have done it before us, and this is just a way of doing it again with a little bit of smarts added to it.
Okay. Now, do you work with I assume you work with an editor on these books.
Now,
does that editor have a lot to do with the kinds of recipes that go in? And so you don't pass them by, say,
no.
Try this?
What happens is I develop the recipes all year long. I'm piddling around in the kitchen. I have a sounding board of five children and a husband, and they will let me know if something tastes good, or I just practice on my own, and we are the test kitchen. Then what we do is we shoot the pictures, and we work very hard to get excellent photographs. We've worked with a food stylist and photographer, Donna Griffith.
A food stylist?
Yes.
I love the notion of a food stylist. Mm-hmm.
I love to use different things, different containers to hold food. We do a lot with leaves, like corn leaves to hold a salad. This is actually a glass tile.
Okay.
And it's watermarked, but it looks fantastic. So we really push the limits, antique spoons, that sort of thing. Actually, my daughter does a lot of the styling as well. Okay. And so this is another step at which we test the food, because all the food has to be prepared. And then we test the food again. So it's probably gone through three testings by the time we put it onto a photograph and say it's palatable for the rest
three
of us.
Three testings of where you've eaten it, or where you've like shot pictures of it?
No. We got to eat it, yeah.
Okay.
And I love to get close-ups. Just this is a forkful of food. But, we have a lot of texture, but simple things, right? And I think that really speaks. My theme in this book was light, energy, wind, and fire. And I wanted all of that captured in the pictures for this book, and I think we've done it.
Okay. Now, you said that your family will let you know when something's good.
Yeah.
And that's a very positive take on it. What happens when they say something is bad? How often does that happen? And then how do you revise?
It happens. It's great. To me, error is a way of growth. So I'm okay when they say to me, Mom, you can't make that. That's terrible. And that has happened. I made the mistake once of cooking quinoa. Mm-hmm. Which is if it's a grain, right? But it has a little bit of a bitter coating on it. And if you don't wash it first, it tastes like soap. Mm. I did that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they'll let you know, and they'll say,
I'm glad.
So in a writing sense, they help you with revision.
They do.
You know, so wash the food, Mom, before you cook it. Okay. Yeah. So what other kind of guidelines do you have when you're writing for this versus, say, writing a column? Or you also have a website and you do Twitter feeds.
Yes, yes.
Tell me about those different things.
Well, I think each of those pieces is joined by something I believe in very much. I could not do anything that I didn't believe in. I always want to be 100% who I am. I'm not driven by sales and numbers and dollars so much as I am. I want to be of service to the reader, because I know that in North America, we are in dire straits. 67% of the population is either overweight or obese. And this is something that I want to address, and I think it can be easily done with good foods. So I make myself very vulnerable to the reader. I tell my story, I tell the jokes, I bring my family into it, mm-hmm. I tell them the hardships as well as the good times. And for example, I'm training for a triathlon. So on my blog and my Twitter, I will talk about my process, how to prepare for that. Mm-hmm. It's humbling, you know. I have fears about swimming with 100 other people kicking me in the face and falling off my bicycle, and maybe I won't make that hill. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way to get the message across.
What's your method for Twittering, things like that? Do you carry around a phone and do it then, or is it something you do once a night when you sit down? How often do you hit the Twitter feed?
I'm so spontaneous that I feel like when I have a thought and it bumps into my head, I just have to do it right then and there. So I have it on my BlackBerry.
Okay, you've got your data plan, your BlackBerry.
My CrackBerry.
Okay, which is sort of appropriate for someone who's interested in foods that you can get, good foods. You have your BlackBerries with you all the time, right?
I do.
Your BlackBerry with you all the time.
I do. Isn't that terrible? I have my BlackBerries with me all the time.
All the time, yeah. So how many kinds of things do you grow? Do you grow in the garden?
Is that also something
you do? And
yeah.
Tell me about those kinds of foods and how you see those as different from the kinds of food that you would buy at, say, Whole Foods or something like that.
Well, I think Whole Foods, first of all, does a wonderful job. Certainly for the person who doesn't have time to grow a vegetable garden, they can deliver those fresh organic foods if you want organic, the bison, the Greek yogurt that's so wonderful. For myself, it's a very healing experience, and there's a lot of photographs in here of my garden to grow my own things. And of course, the garden is only as good as the soil. So I play around a lot with the soil, conditioning it, using my compost, putting activated clay in there, mushroom compost, all sorts of things. And I actually have four quadrants where I have the soil is different in each bed. Mm-hmm. And I play around with that a little bit and see what happened. Now, my tomatoes last year bombed. I don't know what happened. They were terrible. So I did a lot of farmers market tomatoes.
I haven't had a good tomato crop in, I don't know how long, four years.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the soil or if the tomatoes have just
I'm
gone on
sure.
strike, but I understand the pain that you're going through.
I was very frustrated. Yeah. But you know what? My beets were unbelievable. They were just gorgeous. We had lettuce. I think we ate lettuce for most of June and July. It was fantastic. Potatoes. I had red, yellow, and blue potatoes.
So you see a difference in growing potatoes, because those are one of the vegetables, or are they, they're a vegetable or not a fruit, right? There's a weird designation, like sometimes I think tomatoes are fruits.
Right, and a fruit comes from a flower off of something above ground, right?
Oh, okay.
And the potato grows underground, it's like a tuber.
Okay.
So,
I knew that part.
You knew that part.
But I'm curious, do you see a big difference between like potatoes that you grow versus potatoes that you buy? You feel that there's a difference in the taste or quality?
I do. At the time when I can go dig them right out of the garden and then go put them on the grill or something like that. But I don't know if you know this, but because potatoes are thin-skinned, they're among the dirty foods because they absorb so much through that skin, and that includes pesticides and things. So so the potato will actually concentrate chemicals, untoward chemicals, in the flesh and the skin. So for myself, you know, the fresher that potato is, and out of the most natural ingredients, compost and so on, the better.
Okay. Tell me about your favorite recipe and the way that you wrote that recipe or developed that recipe in your kitchen. What's the one that you pick out and say, this is the one you really need to try out of this book if you're going to?
Well, one of my favorites always is, I love bison. And the reason I like bison so much is there's a roasted bison tenderloin recipe in there. It's it's kind of a new food again. It used to be something that was roaming the country free and all the rest of it. But because we raise our beef in such a perverted way on concentrated feedlots, where the animals stand up to their bellies in their own waste, and because then, to fend off bacteria and infection, they are then doused with antibiotics and all sorts of other things, and then they eat grain. Cows aren't supposed to eat grain. That's not the way they're supposed to be fed. They like grass. They like to be range-fed. So I like bison because you get the best of everything. You get the nutritional value of beef, mm-hmm. if not more, less of the untoward fats, and you get CLA, which is something that only comes when animals eat grass. Conjugated linoleic acid is a natural fat burner. It exists in the muscles. But the nutritional profile is fantastic, tastes amazing. You and I, regular cooks, we can cook this no problem. It's not easy. It's not hard to prepare a gorgeous bison tenderloin dinner. I do that with little roasted baby potatoes, and then I steam whatever vegetables are in season. It could be a medley of green beans and peppers. It could be roasted vegetables. And to me, that's just ideal. Good glass of red wine, and you're all set.
Okay. And that recipe is in here?
That's in there.
Okay. So tell me about the dishes that you think have to have what are sort of the traditional bad boys, salt, fat. Your take on what's necessary, what's not okay. necessary, and why?
Well, we need fat, number one. We need functional fats. We just have to be a little more educated about what kind of fats we're reaching for. So, and I like functional fats like olive oil, and I do like coconut oil as well. And those are great cooking oils.
You like them
oils.
For their taste or for their properties as cooking oils?
Both. Okay. And also because they have a health value. Mm-hmm. Coconut oil, for example, has hugely potent antiviral properties. Mm-hmm. It used to be painted with the same brush as all the other saturated fats because it's kind of in a semi-solid state at room temperature. But in fact, it is not a bad boy. So I do like to include that in my cooking as the olive oil. They taste great. They're easy to work with. High smoke points. Great for cooking. But I like other functional fats that don't get heated, namely pumpkin seed oil, rice bran oil, grape seed oil, that sort of thing. Throw them on salads. Wonderful. Now, you mentioned salt. I don't normally use table salt, but I do like sea salt. I just like the flavor of it better. And it has more nutritional qualities because whereas in table salt you have sodium and chloride, in regular sea salt, you have 82 minerals and nutrients in there that the body does still need. So I tend to use sea salt.
Okay. What's the biggest mistake you think Americans make in eating habits? You talked about before you started this that you ate very differently.
Yeah.
So what's sort of your the number one thing that you say are wandering around and you see somebody eating and you think that right there is the problem?
Yeah. And I really think it can be boil down to, I think we just don't think about it. I think it's maybe a lack of education. I think when we go into a grocery store, we see ingredients, we see food, and we think, oh, it's all food, so it's all edible. Mm-hmm. But in truth, there is such an effort for big corporations, food corporations, to try to get the bucks out of your pocket that they will trick us at every turn. So even with these 100-calorie snack well packages, it gets me really upset because 100 calories is ignoring the point altogether. What's in those 100 calories? Sugar, trans fats. Oreo cookies used to have trans fats in them. So we're not thinking about what is actually in the food. We're just buying it because somebody said there's less calories in this or there's reduced fat in that or that's healthy. And so I really think it's a question of going back to the drawing board a little bit and thinking about what we're eating. And that's why I think eating clean makes so much sense because mm-hmm. I put a framework around it. You could eat lean protein. You eat complex carbs from whole grains and fresh fruits. All these vegetables and fruits are good for you. I don't say, you know, only eat grapefruit for 5 days straight. Mm-hmm. It's not a trend. It's a lifestyle.
Okay. How do you get somebody to change the three meal a day habit into, I think you said, the 6 meal a day yeah. habit? How yeah. do you work that around, you know, work schedules, family life, the fact that when kids are in school, therefore, it's sort of acculturated into, for example, my kids, we get up, we have breakfast, they go to school, they have, I think that they actually have a snack, you know, and then they'll have lunch, and then they'll have a snack when they come home for dinner. So maybe that's already what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Just make the
yeah.
dinner bison.
Yeah, or, you know, think about your dinner as not the biggest meal of the day particularly, but just think about the ingredients you're putting in there and not just relying on the pizza package, the pizza pops, the hot dogs.
You know my food. You know what I'm getting. You know my food groups here for my children.
Well, thankfully, we're beginning to pay attention to these things. I think Michelle Obama mentioned that she has a movement now to get kids moving, and that needs to be partnered with making better food choices. And the way to begin anything, no matter how big or small, is with baby steps. So if you're not a breakfast eater, right there, that's a meal. And it's been proven time and time again that those who eat breakfast not only are healthier, but they have less of a tendency to be overweight, and they're more productive in school. Mm-hmm. And consequently at work as well, if you're a working adult. So start with breakfast. Then I'm one of these people, I make planned leftovers. I never boil just one egg. I always boil 12. I never make one chicken breast. I'll do 6. I never make one cup of brown rice. I'll do 2. That way, I know what I'm making for one day's meals, and then I double up and have extras for the following meals coming up. And I find the more that you do that, the less time you're having to spend in the kitchen, and then you get a lot of comfort from knowing, oh, I've got that stuff already, it's no problem. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mother Nature's provided a lot of fast foods in her garden. Nothing is quicker than spinach and tilapia and couscous to make, right? I mean, this is simple stuff. Most of the vegetables only require a light steaming and you're good to go. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Well, let's go to the other side of the thing that you're writing about. You're also the Raise the Bar,
yes,
where you're writing about fitness and writing about it for a particular audience, right? You're looking at generally women 40 yeah. and above. Yeah. Tell me about writing for that audience and for the kind of responses that you've gotten from them. How often, I mean, I'm assuming most of the time people are going to send in and say, okay, you've really helped me, you've changed my life. How often do you get, you know, I dropped, you, somebody that says, thanks to you, I dropped a barbell on my foot. You know, I mean, what
yeah,
kind
we
of
get
responses?
Those. you get the whole gamut. Mm-hmm. By far and away, the column has been a place for me to share my story, good and bad. Mm-hmm. And that also generates similar responses from readers. So, but by far and away, the biggest response is, you've helped, you've taught me how to eat, you've given me permission to eat, you've helped me lose weight. I could stop taking my high cholesterol meds, or I'm off my diabetes meds, or you saved my father's life, or you know, I'll be at the Arnold this weekend, and I have a confessional booth, and we'll be taking stories about all of the things that have transpired to help people regain their health and their life. And to me, writing a column is something. It's pen, it's paper, it's words. But when you see the physical result of that, the stories, so inspirational, that really closes the loop for me, mm-hmm. and it gives me a great deal of satisfaction.
What's the confessional booth? I'm curious about that. So people come up and say, you know, I haven't eaten the way I'm supposed to. I'm not following the things that you've written. Is that what you mean by the
confession? Not exactly. We put in my, magazines, we work 3 months in advance. So I put a call to action in a recent Raise the Bar column saying, I want you to bring me your success stories. I want you to bring me your battered cookbooks. Mm-hmm. Bring me your mother who you helped. Bring me your children who are struggling with eating. Bring me your stories, your photographs, your before and afters. Because as I said before, everybody loves a good before and after story. So, and without that, it's difficult for us to tell our story, because we pepper our books with before and after stories all throughout them. Mm-hmm. And readers respond to this. So this is what's going to happen this weekend. We're going to be gathering more stories, more pictures, testimonials. We'll take the struggles, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Okay. And when you do that, how do you then reuse them later on? Are you writing in the voice of the person, or you're saying here, like you're saying in here, you just have the stories?
We let them tell their story. Okay. I think it's so much more powerful when it comes from them personally, mm-hmm. because otherwise it's just a Valentine to me. Nobody wants to hear me talk. They want to hear how others did it, because that puts everyone in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. For example, we have a success story this weekend. Her name is Allison Ernst, and she is now on the cover of both Women's World out yesterday and First Magazine today, and she is an Eat Clean Diet success story.
Okay.
And I was there 8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
When she started with the Eat Clean Diet 8 years ago, or are you?
No, I was on those covers 8 years ago, and
oh, okay.
she just recently transformed herself by eating clean, and so those magazine covers are out right now with the stories, okay. as well as an expose about eating clean.
Okay.
So it's really becoming a movement. Like you can feel this energy happening. It's okay. Exciting.
Well, that's cool. Tell me about one final thing. You have a professional kitchen where you produce all of this stuff. You do the food. And what features do you consider critical to as a food writer? Yeah. What's the critical?
Okay. I love my gas stove. To me, nothing is more immediate than gas flame because you can control the heat. I need a fantastic refrigerator because I have a lot of produce. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually toying with the idea of building one of those walk-in refrigerators. I don't have that right now.
Wow.
I need a super set of knives. I make a lot of things that are blend. One of my favorite things is my professional hand immersion blender because I can puree soups and all sorts of things with that. So I love that. Garlic press. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of garlic, so I love that too. And I would say a well-stocked pantry. Got to have it, everything clearly there, lots of ingredients. And by the way, to me, that's also the success of the regular you and I kitchen too, mm-hmm. is a well-stocked pantry with lots of things you can reach in and grab and make a meal without too much fuss.
Okay. Yeah. Last question. What's your guilty pleasure that's not on the Eat Clean diet that you, you know, this is your confessional booth, your chance to say,
good one.
You know, every now and then I have a Twinkie.
No, I don't do that. But you know what I do love? I do love a latte, a nicely made latte, and I'll have biscotti with that or a piece of dark chocolate. I'm Dutch, after all.
Okay. Well, you
we
know,
like our chocolate.
Yeah, but the dark chocolate's supposed to be healthy,
it
right?
It is good, yeah. So, I like okay. it, yeah.
All right, well, Tosca Reno, I thank you very much for coming to talk to us today on Writer's Talk.
It's my
and
pleasure.
And the books are The Eat Clean Diet, Tosca Reno's Eat Clean Cookbook over there.
And there's the one that got nominated for the Gourmand Award.
Okay, well, and good luck on that.
Thank you.
And from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Doug Dangler for Writer's Talk saying, keep writing. Mm-hmm.